WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are keeping calm. We're staying local. Don Moeller joining us here, former Baltimore County Executive of all things Baltimore Positive. And, you know, we've been at this a year. And this, I know you know this. This week is our one-year anniversary. And we'll shout out State Fair and Faithley's and our longtime sponsors, as well as our next guest, sibling your child, Jeff Moeller and Moeller and Gary Realty. But this is going to be your favorite segment of the entire thing as we kick off season two, correct?
I never get to talk to our next guest. But, you know, we've had a lot of discussion, Nestor, folks. There's so much interest in education and what's going on, and so much interest in what moms and dads are doing out there to survive. We're talking with recently with Dr. Santelisis in Baltimore City Public Schools, Dr. Williams in Baltimore County Public Schools, and we said we have to have a principal on because they're on the front lines. And I said, well, I actually know one of them. So it is my pleasure to welcome in the principal of Hillcrest Elementary School in Baltimore County, Dr. Jennifer Lynch. And full disclosure, Jennifer has had the unfortunate task of being my daughter for many years. So, Jennifer, welcome to Baltimore Positive.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, I get to ask the question because this is where I soften you all up, all right? What was it like growing up with a father who was a principal now doing the job? Like, what about that prepare? Because, I mean, I talk to Harbaugh about this with his old man all the time. You know, like, what was it like to be a football coach when your dad was a football coach? So at least I've got to green room you on that. That's got to be the first question.
Right. You know, I did not have my father as my principal. My brother had that experience. But growing up, both of my parents were in education my entire time growing up. So it very much shaped my view of education. What has brought me to education in the end. As an adult and as a principal, there is no better mentor than somebody like my father and, you know, who has been through the system in every role all the way up to area superintendent. So if I ever need some advice or I just need to bounce something off of somebody, it is wonderful to have somebody who knows me so well, who knows my thinking and really understands the system inside and out. So as an adult, I would say that has been an absolutely wonderful thing to have my father as my mentor. As a child, I think I would have preferred to have a little space and distance.
Well, you got that now. I mean, it's finally caught up. You finally get all the social distance you want. And I would think through this whole thing, Dad didn't have a playbook for the pandemic for the school principal, right? There's no playbook for that one, right?
No, there isn't. Nobody has that playbook.
Well, Jennifer, I said one of the reasons, and we'll try to break this down because you sort of check all of the boxes that we're interested in and that our listeners are interested in. And before we get to the education side, all of a sudden, here you are, a school principal, you've got daycare for your twins who are 4 years old, you've got a high school senior who you're getting ready to celebrate all the great stuff that goes on in a senior year, the proms, the award ceremonies, the graduations. If you've got a 10-year-old in fourth grade, everything's going along well, and then all of a sudden it's like, boom, you're now going to be a stay-at-home mom, you're going to homeschool, oh, and you're going to run a school at the same time. So talk to, first of all, to the parents out there who feel so inadequate right now and are saying, I'm doing a lousy job and my kids are going to never catch up. What do you say to the moms and dads trying to make this work?
What I say to moms and dads is that this is a global pandemic. So please don't worry. This isn't something that is isolated for our students at Hillcrest or Baltimore County Public Schools. This is something that across the globe, everybody is experiencing right now. So don't worry about getting behind because we're all sort of hitting the pause button on a traditional education right at this moment. There's a lot of value to what is happening at home right now. It's very stressful for families. But children are still getting an education. Parents were their first teachers. They'll be their last teachers. You know, when you are home and you are talking to your children about what they're doing and you're watching them play and you're reading a book to them or cooking dinner with them, these are all really important educational experiences for children. They just don't fit that traditional model. But I want parents to just be gentle with themselves. and to understand that that is education, and just keeping your children feeling safe and sort of insulated from this pandemic is some of the best work that parents can be doing right now. And you're not a stay-at-home, a homeschool teacher. You know, so many parents we're getting emails from are saying, I don't know how to homeschool. Well, this is not homeschool. When you are in a homeschool program, you have curriculums, you have networks, you get to go outside, you get to go to the library. You know, there's a whole different level of structure and support with homeschooling. This is, you are at home trying to figure out how to now work from home and also educate children in this very piecemeal way. And nobody's alone in doing that. When we pick up again, when we come back, we know that there are going to be holes that we are filling in. We are preparing for that right now. My staff is already starting to talk about what is next year going to look like? How are we going to best accelerate our pathways next year, but we're going to be in the same position. Every student across this nation is in the same exact position. So I don't want anybody to ever worry that their children are getting behind somebody else.
Well, it's interesting, Jennifer, that you mentioned the relationship piece, because very recently, Nestor and I had a lengthy conversation with Dr. Sonia Santelli, CEO of Baltimore City Public Schools. And one of the things that she really wanted to reference, and Nestor, I think you would agree, was saying to moms and dads, focus on this time in terms of the relationship piece with your children. She also reiterated what you said. Look, this is global, so don't think it's just applying to your kids. But she said to moms and dads, focus on the relationship. Use this time to build something special. And that's the same message that you're trying to give your parents?
Absolutely. And my hope is that we can all recalibrate a little bit. You know, there are a lot of stressors that have been happening for a lot of our families. They're readjusting financially. They're readjusting their own work. They're readjusting to their own sense of community. And so there's a lot of stress that is happening. But in that, I also hope that people can find those flowers that are sort of growing up through the cracks right now, in that you do have more time to just play with your children, disconnect from all of the sports, the running around, all of these extra activities, just in the simplicity of what we are experiencing right now, that we can really reconnect together as families and just enjoy each other. This is a once in a lifetime experience. And so we have to be able to look for the silver lining in it and really bring out the beauty of it, because we could sit all day and moan and complain about what we can't do, but we will never get the opportunity to have all of our family so insulated under the protection of our homes with nothing to do but to really just be enjoying each other, fostering those relationships and making each other feel important and special and loved.
Jennifer, I want to chime in here on, and I think about for educators, and I see all of these things on TV about technology, and if I walked into your elementary school, I don't think I would recognize it. I mean, I've told Don a couple times, I'm from Colgate Elementary. My school was demolished about a year ago. It was 100 years old, and there's going to be a new one, and I've been in Dundalk High. I barely recognize the way it looks from a pencil and a paper and a pen and, you know, for what children do. The technology piece, and we talked to Dr. Santelisis about this. This really is about privilege and about money and about where you live and how your Wi-Fi is and what your technology and what your device is and your speed and all of that, because it is so different across the country, not just across Catonsville or across Hillcrest or across Baltimore. Mm-hmm. But I would think that part of this is a communication thing for everyone, is that there are best practices everywhere. And to your point, no one had a pandemic playbook, but I'm sure that you probably had a playbook if everybody in your school had the measles and you had to close it down for a week or two or three or a month, right? Like, everyone's had those little things, but the best practice part of, hey, Dolly Parton's reading to kids on Friday nights, right? I mean, everybody's sort of pitching in to do something here, but best practices and sharing that to say, there's an idea of what a teacher's doing out in Iowa. were out in Arizona, and I know, I've known you since we were kids. I know you're stealing, or excuse me, borrowing those ideas all the time. I would think in the middle of this, there's probably some really cool ingenuity in the same way last week we talked to business owners that said, I never had a drive-thru. I went and built one. We never did carry out. We were dining, but we had to do that because, and my drivers, or my my servers are now driving, and I'm hearing that in business and in restaurants. Next week, we're going to tackle the arts. Don and I are going to talk about what's going on for the aquarium and online learning and online museums and different things that that people in, you can engage with your children with education. If you can't bring them to the aquarium, you can't bring them to the science center. Hey, there's something online that can be educational. And I think I go back to, I mean, last week, my wife and I were looking for old electric company videos because we had a conversation about this, that when I was in the second and third grade at Colgate Elementary, Mrs. Houck, and there's a shout out to Melissa Houck, who was my favorite teacher, we learned to read through electric company and Sesame Street and these other things that, I'm talking 1974 here, in 2020, I would think some really clear-headed folks like yourself who love your children and are educators everywhere are sharing really cool ways to sort of do this pandemic education thing, right?
It is amazing to me just how many people have come to the forefront to really share their expertise and their knowledge in a lot of different ways. You're seeing CEOs and companies sharing information. You're seeing longtime educators share information. You're seeing actors and artists and musicians share information. Everybody has something to really add as a community. And so as we are sort of isolated in our own homes right now, in a way, we are really coming together in a community and as a community in a very different way. And I think one of the benefits is that for a long time in education, technology has been sort of demonized. It's been, this is why our kids aren't progressing, is because they're spending so much time on technology. And yet here we are right now in this place where technology is really one of the very, maybe one of the only ways that we can really start to come together as a community and push out some of these learning opportunities. And what we're seeing is just the vast amount of really strong educational resources that are out there that in the past have been hidden behind some other things. They've always existed. You know, you've always been able to go to the Smithsonian or go to the Louvre or go to the aquarium and see some things online. And yet they haven't been accessed by so many of our families. And so I think one of the benefits right now is that communities, parents are figuring out quality resources that are educational that their children can be on and use technology effectively. So I'm hoping that part of what we're going to see is a shift to really using good quality resources in technology and parents feeling more comfortable using those technological resources at home as well.
Well, for those of you just joining us in the car or tuning in on Facebook, we are with Dr. Jennifer Lynch, principal of Hillcrest Elementary School in Baltimore County. Jennifer, to make people who out there are feeling overwhelmed and trying to fit work in and take care of their families and chase little ones around and make sure they're getting on the table, to make them feel better and show that we're all in this together, tell us where you're actually doing this interview from at this moment.
Well, I had to drive to Hillcrest Elementary School and sit. I'm sitting in my principal parking spot at Hillcrest Elementary School right now, talking to you on my cell phone because I could not be in my home and get a little bit of peace. This morning I tried to have a Microsoft Teams meeting with all of my faculty to go over some things. And I was actually being chased by my toddler daughter who wanted my attention. And as I kept trying to change rooms, she was following me and getting more and more agitated to the point where I'm on a team meeting holding my device, actually sort of running down my hallway, hoping I could get to the next room and lock it before she could get in there with me.
Yeah, I remember back when a CNN guy had, like, the kid run in the room. We thought that was the rage, right? We thought that that was the greatest thing ever, right? Almost like Obama's tan suit at this point, I think, right?
And the other day you were having some district-wide meeting, and the kids were outside. It was a nice day, right? And then there was an incident where one of the twins ran into the street. Tell us a little bit about that story.
So we were on a meeting with all of the principals doing the same sort of virtual meeting, and the twins had run outside. We made the mistake of getting a brand new swing. I got the swing because I thought, I need something for them to do.
Perfect occupier for kids, right? What could go wrong?
Right. And but they want to be on it all the time. And it's in the front yard, and that makes me a little bit nervous because it's close to the street. And so they went running outside while I'm on this meeting. So I take my computer, and I'm going outside to follow them outside to tell them to come back in. And by the time I can get out there, my daughter is on a bicycle, and she's going down my neighbor's driveway between two parked cars into the street, and there's a FedEx truck that's coming down the street at the same time. And I'm asking a question. I'm not actually muted, just sort of a passive participant in the meeting at this time. I am on the mic asking a question, and in the middle of it, give this screeching, you know, call out to my daughter, and then had to go back to the question. I was like, I'm so sorry. My daughter almost got hit by a car. Here's the rest of my question.
It doesn't, Nestor, it doesn't get much more real than that in the age of pandemic, does it?
Well, I mean, I think for everyone, there's this sense in the beginning of frazzled, and now there's hopefully a couple of weeks into this a sense of whatever the new normal is going to be for a little while. What is the new normal for, I'm just hitting it right in the middle, second, third, fourth grader in your school? What does a day look like, hopefully, from the principal standpoint, as well as for, you know, whoever their teacher is who may or may not have a child running into the street in front of a FedEx truck at the same time? You know, I was watching the morning news the other day, and I heard a kid screaming during the weather report, mommy, mommy. So I have an appreciation for, we've seen the potato head lady, you know, trying to hold the meeting out on Zoom. So we're all getting comedy out of this to some degree. And I think we're all finding some comedy that maybe 2 weeks ago we wouldn't have laughed about your child running in front of a truck. But at this point, she's okay, everything's fine, right? But what is the normal experience, or what could be the best of new normal, especially if this goes on for, let's say, the rest of the spring?
Well, I think one of the things that you have to consider is that what is normal is really going to depend on what your home experiences are.
Sure.
And so, you know, that's something that I think we always have to hold present in our mind, is that what is going to be normal for me and my children is going to be very different than the normal for a lot of other families. And so, you know, I always hesitate to sort of present what should be typical or what people should be presenting, because it's all going to look a little bit different. One of my major concerns is, in this pandemic, is just that we have this sort of untapped or silent population of students that, now that we can only access generally through technology, we're losing these students. So we don't know what their typical day is. We don't really necessarily have a great idea of what the new normal is, and we can't even be in touch with families in an effective way to help provide that structure for them or that information. For a lot of our families, you know, we have parents who are now suddenly find themselves unemployed. That presents a lot of different challenges. We have families that are suddenly trying to work from home with, you know, if it's with teenagers, that's one thing. But if you have toddlers or newborns and you are suddenly trying to hold a conference while you are also trying to get lunch for your children, you know, those are challenges that are real around the globe right now. And so that is the new normal, is just this sense of being frazzled and sort of not being able to juggle managing young children at home as well as managing a full-time career or those other roles and expectations at home. I think for a lot of our teachers, you know, they are in that same boat. They are trying to make sure that they are educating their own children while also spending a good part of their day worrying about their school children. I can't tell you how many phone calls I get or text messages or emails. I'm worried about this child. Had you been able to get in touch with this child? So they are really still putting their school children at the forefront of their mind. They're still planning lessons. They're communicating with their students any way they can. Our teachers did not miss a beat when we shut down. Within less than 24 hours notice, we had networks set up to communicate and to connect with families that we thought may end up disconnected in this process. our teachers started putting out emails and Facebook and YouTube messages. You know, they've sent letters through snail mail so that children would get postcards. Our teachers haven't missed a beat in making sure that their students feel safe and part of a community as they get disconnected in this pandemic.
Well, Jennifer, tell us one of the things, and again, we're with Dr. Jennifer Lynch, principal of Hillcrest Elementary School in Baltimore County. Jennifer, tell folks what from, and we're going to be talking shortly with Dr. Williams, the superintendent of the school system. Tell us, as this thing is evolving, what instruction looks like in the delivery system on behalf of the school system to students. So going back to Nestor's question, do you break it down? Is it K through 2 and then 3 through 5 and then middle and high? How does it break down and how are we delivering curriculum?
So it does break down along those lines. So it's a K through or pre-K through 2 band, a 3 through 5 band, and then your middle and high school students. And middle and high school students have their own devices that are issued by Baltimore County. So those students all took their technology home with them. So their learning is going to look slightly different than what it will look like in elementary school. Their teachers are going to be pushing out lessons. They're going to be holding weekly class meetings, providing discussion boards, assignments that can be turned in and provided feedback. So that's what that's going to look like in the middle and high school level.
Man, you talk about discussion boards in middle school and high school. I can't even imagine. That's something I can't relate to, right? My kid didn't have that at the turn of the century, and I certainly didn't have that 40 years ago. It really is a different level of connectivity, right? And a different level of probably responsibility, right? I mean, it's if you are checking in, you've got to check in, right? You can't check out.
Right. Well, I think, you know, one of the things that we always want to be mindful of is that there are going to be students who, for a multitude of reasons, cannot check in. And so we can't make the assumption that just because they haven't checked in means that they are checked out. They may have an access and an opportunity barrier that's preventing them from checking in. And so that's our job as educators, is to make sure that the children who appear not checked in are really that we're connecting with.
But you can't go knock on their door right now. That's the most difficult part, right?
That is the challenge, is because our usual strategies of doing a home visit or checking in with them as they come into school are our usual bag of tricks we can't use anymore. But we are trying to utilize a lot of different technologies. We do still have our language line available through Baltimore County Public Schools, so we still can reach out to families and use a language line for any family who needs an interpreter. We are still utilizing our counselors, our nurses, our pupil personnel workers to help us connect with families and make sure that they're getting the resources that they need. We are quickly learning some tips and tricks. You know, YouTube is something that is pretty universally accessed on any phone, and so we're finding that a lot of families who may not even have some other access are still finding a way to connect with us through YouTube. So we're doing our best to find different ways to put a touch on all of our parents. But the expectation is that students are going to continue to move their learning forward in some way. And they are expected to engage in some level of learning over these, you know, this next course of 4, 6, 8, however many weeks we end up in this situation.
Well, Jennifer, it's interesting. I've been following Hillcrest on Facebook, and you've been putting out multiple videos and multiple messages. And again, what we heard from Dr. Santelises, I imagine we're going to hear from the same from Dr. Williams. She wanted to say to folks, look, don't panic. Here's some things you can do that you all absolutely know how to do. And it's interesting to me, it really went back to the 3 R's, that old thing that we used to joke about, reading, writing, and arithmetic. You know, I think there were songs written about it. And she said, you can't stress enough that if you're having your children read and really need read interesting and meaningful text, if you're just working with them where they are and having them do some math every day and some writing, you're going to be surprised at how the gap isn't what you might have expected it to be. Talk a little bit about those basics, because I see you sharing that message on Facebook as well.
Absolutely. I think that the most important thing when a parents call or when they email me and they say, I can't get all of this done, how do I prioritize? My top priority for parents always is reading. Always, always, always. Read with your child. Have them read to you. Read together. It's okay if parents are doing a read aloud to their child, even if their child is able to read. It's just part of that connection with literature. And if your students are engaging in reading every single day, they're going to become better readers. They're going to become better writers because they are exposed to a multitude of writing styles in reading. They're going to have a better vocabulary. If you talk to them about what they're reading, they're going to have better comprehension. And all of these things are foundational in everything that we do in the schoolhouse. So having those skills are something that are really going to support a student who has had this break to be able to come in and easily pick up next year and keep it moving. You know, there's a lot of really easy things that parents can do at home. Having students journal every single day, do some level of writing every single day, some level of reading, and practicing basic math facts. These are things that any parent can have their child do that will really support their learning moving forward.
Jennifer, a pleasure to have you aboard. Dad's been threatening to have you on here for a long time. It took a pandemic, so I hope it's not the last time we have you on until after a pandemic. But, I think of elementary school, and I think of, like, you know, chocolate milk and cookies. We've come a long way, haven't we?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that what we're doing right now is virtual chocolate milk and cookies.
I love
right?
that. So, perfect.
You know, we are right now what we need everybody to understand is that we are still a community. We may not be entering that brick schoolhouse every single day together, but we are still a community. We are still here. We are still connected. And so we are providing right now that virtual cookies and milk to make sure that everybody knows that we're here to give that love and support.
Well, Jennifer, I know you have to run because my grandchildren have probably destroyed the house, and my poor 18-year-old who turned 18 today is probably pulling her hair out. But before you go, I want our listeners to hear, and Nestor, you and I chatted about this the other day. Dr. Santelise has touched on it. Dr. Williams, I know, will touch on it. Talk to us about your concern about the whole equity issue and the gaps that may or may not be exacerbated by this pandemic, because I think there's a real subtext to that about something that we have to be aware of, and the unequalness of education at this time in America, and equity is something that Nestor's really interested in.
I think we have had really deep equity conversations in these last couple of weeks. You know, equity's been something that's been on the forefront of our minds for a long time, especially at Hillcrest. But when you have a pandemic like this, what it really does is it highlights just how much American schooling is really geared towards a privileged America. So, you know, we shut the doors and we say, go home and do some online learning. And we have an assumption that, first of all, you have internet access, that you know where you would go and you would get that information.
And that your parents are available to help you as well, right? Literally.
Exactly. Or that they speak English. You know, we have a lot of students who are new to our country, their parents speak multiple languages, and so they are just now learning the English language. And so we are asking them to now navigate independently without any support a completely English-based system with very little support. And very little knowledge of what American schooling looks like or what the expectations would be. And so we're sending some students home to environments in which there just isn't a foundational understanding or support to support what traditional schooling looks like. And I think that that's what we have to be clear about. That's what traditional schooling looks like. And it doesn't mean that these families are not providing really meaningful education for their children at home. It just means that what they're providing is not going to be in alignment with supporting that movement forward when they return. Their gaps will be bigger when they come back because they won't have had that access maybe to rich text, or they won't have been working through some things on the computer and doing some self-paced learning on Khan Academy or something else like that. So these are our equity issues across the board. And the fact that right now we don't even know how to connect with these families in some elements, you know, when they're not coming to the schoolhouse with us, if we don't, if our families don't have cell phones or they don't have internet access, you know, we are losing touch with our families that we really need to be giving the most amount of support to at this time. And that's a huge concern.
Well, what is, Jennifer, what does that look like then when those students return, whether that be in the end of May or whether it be in August or September? What does that mean in terms of assessment and planning and preparation to identify whether or not gaps have widened and how we then address those gaps? What does that look like at the schoolhouse?
Well, our teachers begin formative assessments on day one with our students. Our teachers are always assessing our students. We're not waiting for unit assessments or standardized assessments or state-level assessments. You know, we are in the classroom assessing student learning on a daily basis. So very quickly, our teachers are able to identify where needs are based on a comprehensive sort of data profile of formative assessments and standardized assessments. And we're looking at all of that and saying, this is where their skill gaps are, and now what are we going to do about it? And we are already right now talking about how we are going to mitigate that when that comes back. We are already anticipating that and talking about what our structures are going to be so that we are ready to hit the ground running to fill in some of those gaps. Some of the gaps are going to be school-wide. Some of them, we make assumptions about gaps and what populations of students are going to have gaps when we return. And I think we're going to find that we're going to be surprised that we have gaps that have developed for almost all of our students in very unique ways. So we're going to have some unique learning pathways next year where we're going to have to say, this group of students needs a little bit more work on this, and we're going to give some time and some additional adult supports to making sure that we are building that capacity. And we're going to have to look at our curriculum and make sure that we are modifying that to meet everybody where they are right now and accelerate them to where they should be. So this is a process that is starting for us right now. It's ongoing. We meet weekly and monthly with teams of teachers. Teachers come in and meet with administration on a daily basis when they're concerned about students. And so that process will continue. What I don't want people to worry about is, you know, if my child has gaps, what does that mean and where are they placed? Everybody's going to have gaps. And so what learning is going to look like for us next year is going to be a lot more fluid and flexible as we meet the needs of every gap that walks into our building.
Well, Nestor, you said we would get smarter every session, and certainly talking to Dr. Santelise, talking to Dr. Jennifer Lynch, Daryl Williams and the Baltimore County Public School Superintendent. I think you and I are getting smarter by the minute, or at least they're trying to make us.
She worries me because I think if I come back in fourth or fifth grade, I might not pass. You know, I mean, I may struggle. So, you know, I do watch your videos, and I do see all your posts. I was trying to find early in the segment, you put up some great thing on your one of your classroom ledgers. It was just some inspirational thing, and it had something to do with kindness and something to do with all the qualities the President of the United States lacks these days. And it was some sort of side sort of light at that of like what we're teaching second graders to do, the greater world could use. So in some ways, I do go back to all of those things often written in cursive on the walls or in plain type that were inspirational to me at Colgate Elementary about how we learn. And I think it's not a bad thing for parents to go back and see those walls and know where we all came from, right?
No, everything you ever needed to know you learned in kindergarten certainly still applies.
Well, yeah, was that the list that you put up? I was trying to get it so I could read from it because it was so simplistic. Don shared it, you shared it, I shared it, but it was like a couple of years ago, and there's all these pictures, all these kids up on your face. I can't find anything but your children, so I love that. It's great having you on.
I think it was at the 50-year celebration.
It was, and it was a list that actually our teachers had put up of just, you know, just some basic rules of how we are going to engage with each other as a community, and it was about, you know, showing kindness and being empathetic and that kind of thing.
Sharing, remember sharing your toys? It was simple stuff, right?
We will take the list out. We will share it. Jennifer, thanks so much. Go home and make sure my grandchildren haven't destroy the house. Now take us out of here.
Jennifer Lynch, Dr. Jennifer Lynch, the principal at Hillcrest Elementary School in the 21228 where there's no hate. Big thanks to, speaking of Catonsville, got two great sponsors in Catonsville, three if you count her brother in Moeller and Gary Realty. And we're going to have Jeff on the program next week talking about the state of the real estate market as well. State Fair, I have been threatening to somehow get Evan Brown's chicken recipe, fried chicken recipe for the chicken and waffles. I've been threatening to make those here in the condo for my wife. I probably should just go curbside and get over there. We also had our dear friends on from Franco's and Lou Weinkamp from Catonsville, so I guess I got to pick up a pizza, some chicken and waffles, some shrimp and grits. And soon enough, Fadley's will be in Catonsville as well. Fadley's has had to close their doors physically down at Lexington Market, but you can order and deliver those crab cakes. For being a guest on our program, Dr. Jennifer Lynch will receive two crab cakes from Fadley Seafood. So you can ship those now, and you can certainly still find our dear friends, the Hahn family, and everyone out at Fadley's.com as well. All right. I am easy to find, and Ness at Baltimore Positive finds me, Don Moeller, and I doing all sorts of educational stuff this week. Next week, we're going to move to the arts and online and education. We're going to continue on. We are keeping calm. We are staying local. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive.